What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapit is the Backstage Report. It is May 11th, and we got plenty of backstage news for you. I have a big Jon Moxley interview dropping this week. I had my Lio Rush interview drop, but not all the stories are out yet. Those are going up next week, so we'll have more on his interview next week, but I do have a little bit there. And of course, I had the Dana Brooke interview drop. We got the Blue Meanie interview dropping this week. We got news on Vince McMahon. Let's just jump right into it, why don't we? Jon Moxley, in case you were wondering who had the idea for Jake Hager to no-sell Jon Moxley's finisher a while back, it was Moxley himself. He told me that the spot was by design. That way it made the DDT on the chair that he did later look more impactful. We actually did this interview a couple of weeks ago, but I asked him some evergreen stuff, and I wanted to put some distance between my interview and the interview media tour he was going on at the time, because I knew we would ask him different things than the rest of the field did. And he's got this premiere coming up Saturday, so we're running a bunch of the articles this week. And he actually repeated that line about how much more impactful a DDT is on a chair on an episode of Dynamite that aired after our interview, which I thought was very cool. The match was filmed because Moxley wanted to get as much stuff in the can as he possibly could, or at least he specified that it was him. John wanted to call the match a no-holds-barred match because of the connection between the term and the early days of MMA fighting. And of course, Jake Hager is involved in MMA these days, so the crossover aspect of it was there. He noted that Hager is a lot stronger and faster than most people realize. He said that there were switches, scrambles, and a lot of takedown attempts where he was like, oh, okay, and realized that Jake Hager could have mopped the floor with him at any given time that he actually wanted to, and wanted to convey that message via their match. He also said that Hager at one point did a shoot gut wrench powerbomb to him during the match, and he had no idea what was going on. Moxley seemed to really like the match. It wasn't the best received online by the masses, but it seemed like Moxley was very happy with it and said that it went basically the way that he wanted. Moxley told me that he still plans on doing Bloodsport. Now, he was supposed to do it back in August, SummerSlam weekend. It did not work. They ended up having to pull him from that show because of an injury. Then he was supposed to do it in Tampa against Josh Barnett, and of course, the coronavirus, COVID-19 pandemic ended up putting the kibosh on that. He joked that it hasn't been canceled as many times as Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov, so they still got a few to go. They're only on number two. Khabib and Tony are on number five, and joked with us that maybe they'll have to roll out Matt somewhere and just do the match. Now, the thing is, that they can do that. Obviously, Josh Barnett would lose out on his gate, and GCW would lose out on their gate for it, but you don't even have to have a ring to do this. It's just a platform. That's it. Somewhere where you can wrestle, grapple, fight, and you're good to go. Moxley tuned into WrestleMania. He said that he watched both nights of it in its entirety and enjoyed it. Spoke very highly of the flow of the show and said that the performers worked their asses off. He felt bad that the wrestlers that have worked hard all year didn't get their WrestleMania moments as planned. He really liked the Boneyard match between Undertaker and AJ Styles and says Undertaker is like a comic book character or an action star from decades past that we still buy into, sort of like a John McClane from Die Hard or a John Wayne from everything that ever existed. I like that analogy and that approach, because when I had reached out to Matt Hardy about WWE using this more cinematic concept, he wasn't even upset. He said that he thought that The Undertaker could get a few more years out of his career this way, and he was all for that. I think that this type of response from two people who left WWE with such sour grapes is a real indicator and an example of how respected The Undertaker is in wrestling. And that's not like me giving you any scoop there. Of course, The Undertaker is one of the most respected guys in the history of pro wrestling. He's been in WWE for 30 years. He's been wrestling for 33 years at this point. He's been around. He's been everywhere. We're talking five different decades he's competed in now. Four different decades he's main evented a WrestleMania. And I think the fact that Jon Moxley had such a bitter ending with WWE and Matt Hardy had such a creatively frustrating ending with WWE, that they both see that type of Boneyard match for what it is, that's a ton of respect in its own, I think. I asked Moxley if it was hard to gauge his success or his performance as AEW World Champion because he hasn't been in front of an audience that much. And he said, yeah, I think that I've only been in front of the crowd one time since Double or Nothing. And then ever since then, it's been in front of nobody. And that's going to be a weird situation. Drew McIntyre's never been in front of anybody. Braun Strowman's never been in front of anybody as champion. And by all indications digitally, those two are doing well. By all indications digitally that I have, Jon Moxley is doing well. So that's pretty wild that three of the biggest digital draws, at the very least, we can't really gauge from an audience perspective because we don't hear the noise outside of when Moxley's out there and you've got other wrestlers. But all these guys are doing outstanding YouTube numbers. Braun Strowman over 1 million regularly. Drew over 1.5, 2 million regularly. Jon Moxley cracking 1 million regularly for a show that gets less than half the viewers. Maybe a third of the viewers. He said that being champion or even running these shows in this landscape isn't ideal, but it's what they have to do. He was really bummed out for a lot of the independent wrestlers that missed out on paydays and bookings and advancing their career. He was upset about losing Blood and Guts because he thought that was going to be a big show for AEW as well. While I had Moxley, I asked him about his favorite agents and producers in WWE, and he said that Joey Mercury was instrumental, and you hear a lot of people say stuff like that. The Joey Mercury that we hear and know of today, or at least did a few months ago, gosh, 5-6 months ago now, is not necessarily the one that we heard about back then. He was being groomed for a pretty large producer role there and was very instrumental. Moxley did say that he thinks that Jamie Noble is the best producer there was, and even mentioned catching Brian Danielson, now Daniel Bryan, against Jamie Noble on TV a while back, an old Ring of Honor match, and ended up sitting down and checking that out. He says that Michael Hayes was another one that proved him wrong a lot of times because he thought that he knew what was best for his own match and his own career, and that Michael Hayes would give him advice, and it would almost always get proven true. He said that the AEW creative process is a collaborative one and hasn't seen anyone get mad or upset when their ideas get passed on or are changing. As we had reported on Fightful months ago, Tony Khan has taken a more increased role and is went from being the final say to being the loudest voice in the room in that regard. And since then, you still don't hear anybody coming out with creative frustration or anything like that. I don't have people from that company telling me that. So the fact that Jon Moxley is still creatively satisfied there, I think that speaks volumes about where they're going and what they're doing right now. What Jon Moxley's doing right now is getting ready for the Cage Fighter Worlds Collide movie. If you guys are unfamiliar with that, Jon Moxley plays an extension of himself, a pro wrestler, and he is moving to MMA. Now, Jon Moxley did a lot of MMA training for this. There were some spots that he didn't end up using, like his character didn't kick a lot. So he trained a lot of this stuff, and he says it helped out a lot, but he didn't end up using all of it, but he did indicate that he was glad that he got it. He wasn't on set with UFC fighter Luke Rockhold, but did get to meet and work with Chuck Liddell. And Chuck Liddell talked to him a little bit about pro wrestling here and there, but said that he wouldn't mind seeing Luke Rockhold make that crossover as well. Full interview goes about 24 minutes. It is now up for all early access subscribers. That is tier 2. Talked to Dana Brooke. She said that she would love her boyfriend Ulysses Diaz to make a move to pro wrestling and says that she even foresees it. I love talking to wrestlers about who they think would be able to make that crossover. And based on what I've seen out of Ulysses Diaz, from his look, his skill set, all that, I think he could do it because he went from boxing. Well, he went from just being a tough guy to boxing, doing really well. He went to bare knuckle. He did MMA. He's done jiu-jitsu competitions. And he seems keen on the idea as well as he grew up watching pro wrestling. Dana says that she pays attention to his training and participates in some of the agility drills and says that she grew up wanting to try out MMA but ended up transitioning into wrestling. She would consider giving combat sports a shot after she's done wrestling but hasn't integrated as much of the MMA training into her work. She did say that she was overwhelmed and flattered by so many of her colleagues picking her to win Money in the Bank, including Natalya, who spoke really highly of her. And other women on the roster recognizing her hard work to improve. makes her feel better about it. She said that when she saw a video of people predicting who would win Money in the Bank, and so many of her contemporaries and colleagues were picking her and citing how much she had worked to improve, that it stood out to her. And the fact that Natalia, a person that she's worked with quite a bit and has been around for well over a decade, pointed that out too. She said that it makes it feel worth it. Makes her feel like she's doing the right thing. She said that she was shocked by the idea that they would be doing this Money in the Bank match at the WWE headquarters. And of course, she said that she was even a little bit in shock when she was put in a match with Naomi, who she says is a friend of hers. And she was like, man, do I really have to face her for it? But it was a little bit in kayfabe there, if you couldn't tell, because we did have to do this interview as if she hadn't filmed the match. That was something I took to her. And I said, listen, I know that you all filmed this match 3 weeks ago. And she gave me like one of those grins, like, how do you know? Because I get the feeling she doesn't exactly follow the sheets. And I said, we can either do it as if the match hasn't happened yet, which, you know, it hadn't aired, and we can release it this week, or we can act as if it has happened. You don't have to give away any spoilers, and we can act like it has already happened. And we can release it next week. And she went with the promotion ahead of Money in the Bank, and I'm glad that she did. She was a pleasure to talk to. She is a wonderful person, and Yuli Diaz was awesome to talk to. That guy, I'm glad that he's in combat sports now, but I wish he would have gotten into combat sports 15 years ago. This could be a guy that we'd be talking about in like the same vein as a Masvidal right now, or a Nate Diaz. Like, he's got this aura about him that sticks out really well. We talked to Dana and Yuli about their regimens and routines and how that's changed since the quarantine and all that. And Dana said that she's a person that had such a strict regimen and a routine for so long, it is a little different for her. They're the kind of people where they feel like if they're not doing anything, then something's wrong. And that's quite the adjustment that they have to make. An adjustment was made last year. Leo Rush talked to him for a big interview, and he said that he was slated to become the Intercontinental Champion. And he thought that people might like it, they might not like it, but when he was teaming with Lashley, it was supposed to happen. It was supposed to have unfolded during WrestleMania season and the feud with Finn Balor, but he cannot remember why it ended up getting nixed. Either way, check out his album, musicbyleo.com. I talked to him for over 40 minutes. It is up for early access subscribers, but I'm going to have a lot more about this interview on next week's Backstage Report. Just a ton of stuff. We've got like 6 or 7 stories coming out of that interview. I wanted to drop this one this past weekend, though, because I knew that he was talking to a few people, too, and I definitely wanted you all to hear that first as our subscribers. Something else you heard is our subscribers. Oh, boy. So some of you may have remembered an interview that Becky Lynch did with Scott Fishman of TV Insider a couple weeks ago, where she said, I think Vince would do pretty well on Money in the Bank because he's an eccentric character. I watched him the other day demonstrate falling off a tower at 74 years old without a bother, brushing his shoulders off, standing up again. Well, I asked around about this, about Vince McMahon doing this spot. And the people that I talked to said, well, we don't know about Money in the Bank, but at WrestleMania 36 rehearsals, Rob Gronkowski was kind of nervous about taking his dive off the platform. So Vince McMahon went up there, he did the dive and said, ah, not so bad, is it? And that everybody was sitting around like, did that just happen? Did Vince McMahon just do that dive? Now, that's the thing. You always hear Vince won't ask anybody to do anything that he wouldn't do himself. There are some clear exceptions to that rule. He's not jumping off the Titantron, even 20 years ago when Shane did it. But he did the Shawn Michaels zipline at WrestleMania 12. That was 24 years ago. Vince was 50 then, 49, 50, and you can still do it. He was an in-shape 50, too. So he's 74 now. Significantly more frail and aged than he was back then. Amazing. You can criticize Vince McMahon for all kinds of things, but my God, the balls on that guy. to do that dive and act like it was no big deal. Like, meh. Okay. And I had this confirmed by like a half dozen people, including a couple that weren't even with the company anymore. Because I was like, oh, maybe they saw it a different way. Maybe they heard about it a different way. Maybe this will I don't know, add a new wrinkle, a new layer or anything. No, they said it happened just like that. Unbelievable. Pretty cool, too. Talk to the Blue Meanie as ECW month continues. I like talking to people about things that I haven't really heard about before, and evergreen stuff especially. This is another one of those interviews that I was finally able to recover from WrestleCade. And he said that in 1998, he did an indie date, and he came home to an answering machine message from Al Snow asking about his contract status with ECW. At the time, he was starting to get some bounce checks from Paul Heyman and was offered a spot in WWE. So Bruce Pritchard finalized the deal. Next thing you know, Blue Meanie's in the WWF. So during that point, he had lost a bunch of weight for the WWF. And by the time he came back to ECW, he had been working with a nutritionist for a long time. And there were people who didn't have the internet or anything like that, couldn't keep progress with, or couldn't keep up to date with his progress, rather, didn't even believe he was the Blue Meanie anymore. So instead, he came back into ECW and did the fat-shaming Blue Boy gimmick. Paul Heyman even had reservations, and Meanie presented him with the ideas and admitted that it was really difficult for him to be a heel, because anybody who has talked to the Blue Meanie knows he's not a heel. He's not a bad guy, even though he was the Blue Guy. He's not a bad dude. He is one of the nicest dudes in wrestling history. We closed by recalling Rick Bogner as the fake Razor Ramon. He did that in ECW as well before his WWF run. It's a fun interview, man. I really like talking to the Blue Meanie, and I hope that you guys are really liking ECW month as well. As is tradition, not a lot of contract or injury updates this week. We did have Chris Bay talking about his Impact contract. He had confirmed that he had been signed to Impact Wrestling a couple months before it was revealed, and that Impact conveniently revealed it after Cody Rhodes kind of talked about him, but nobody from AEW had reached out to him. Jeff Cobb talked about his contract status, seemed to be happy with the AEW spot, said it was a good payday, and said that he wanted to work without a contract in Ring of Honor, but that eventually he'll end up somewhere, whether it's Ring of Honor or somewhere else, with a contract. But as of right now, he didn't want to do that. Seems like it would have probably been a good idea to have one throughout this period, but I hope he's doing well financially. Dana Brooke reiterated to me that she signed a new 5-year deal at the end of last year, so good for her. Injury updates. Will Ospreay has said that due to the time off, he is completely healed. That he had a bunch of nagging, smaller injuries, and now he's healed up. On last week's list in your boy, I had put out there, WWE has been trying to clear, I think, Jessamyn Duke. She had double elbow surgery. She's been in for a couple evaluations, I believe. Jimmy Uso has that knee injury, out 6 to 9 months. That ain't good, but it is good that AJ Styles is back after a month. Technically after a month. Here's the interesting thing about AJ Styles. He missed a month on TV, right? The ironic thing was he wasn't wrestling after Elimination Chamber until WrestleMania. That match was filmed in late March. It aired early April. AJ Styles was not on TV for about 3-4 weeks after that match, but they had actually filmed Money in the Bank a couple weeks after WrestleMania. So AJ Styles wasn't really out for any extended period, which is good. Let's hit you with some stats, my friends. Kenny Omega, Matt Hardy teamed together for the first time ever. Titus O'Neil had his first match of 2020 on Monday. His last televised match was also a quick loss to Bobby Lashley in December. But besides that, he hadn't been on Raw in a actual match since last May. Outside of the Royal Rumble, Shelton Benjamin's last 9 televised matches had been on Main Event prior to Monday. Shelton hasn't won a singles match on Raw since 2006 with a win over Super Crazy. He did win a tag team match, a mixed tag match with Beth Phoenix against Candice Michelle and Jeff Hardy in 07, and a 14-on-2 handicap match in 08. Lashley and Humberto Carrillo both eliminated three people in the Monday Gauntlet match. AJ Styles was on WWE programming for the first time since WrestleMania and competed in his first actual wrestling match since Elimination Chamber. AJ Styles had one clean win on WWE TV in 2020 before Monday. Akira Tozawa has lost 11 straight matches on Raw. Cedric Alexander and Ricochet are now 3-3 as a team. Shane Thorne and Brendan Vink got their first main roster wins on Monday. Jon Moxley and Brody Lee had 7 televised matches in WWE. Brody won only one of those matches as Luke Harper, but they'll have the distinction of wrestling on Raw, SmackDown, WWE, and AEW pay-per-view. Adam Cole made some history. He's not just the longest reigning NXT champion of all time. He's got the longest combined reign of all time as well. He's the first man to hold that title for over 300 days. During his reign, he successfully defended the title on NXT, Raw, SmackDown, Evolve, WWE pay-per-view, and NXT TakeOver. He is the only man to do that. Cole's title defense against Velveteen Dream was his first since February 16th. How about this one? Matt Hardy has not won a wrestling match since last July. His last televised win was the tag team title victory in April 2009 with Jeff after WrestleMania. And here's a bonkers stat. From February 2018 to April 8, 2018, Matt Hardy beat Bray Wyatt on WWE pay-per-view, beat him on Raw in Final Deletion, beat Goldust on Raw, and won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Since then, he does not have a singles televised win. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate you all. I cannot tell you how much it means to me that you guys are willing to invest in us. Thank you so much. Until next time, we're out.